Wednesday edition. Day three of Tausch's vacation. Jesse, do you know how long this vacation is lasting for him? Do we know when he's scheduled to reappear?
Sometime next week. I think the Brewers' home opener is Tuesday. There might be a target date for old T. I don't even know where he is.
I don't either. He doesn't tell us that sort of thing. Edition. The man, how lucky are we? What is Harbaugh's line? Who's got it better than us?
Nobody.
Nobody.
We've got such a great group of cousin subs of the day. Cousin subs we believe in better. That we could survive without the straw that stirs the drink just fine. In fact, we don't just survive, we thrive. We had Justin Garcia, a lot of Bucks talk on Monday. We had Brian Bulaga, Iowa, yesterday. And we got another one of my favorites, one of my favorite teammates, and I do enjoy telling him how old he is by telling him how much I enjoyed watching him play for the Badgers when I was a kid. Or listening to him play, more accurately, because the games weren't always on TV. We'll tell you who it is next edition of Wildy and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker, streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and of course everything you could possibly need on WisconsinOnDemand.com. And the Wisconsin On Demand app. I'm Jason Wilde in Green Bay. The aforementioned Jesse Nelson is in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios. And our cousin sub of the day, cousin subs, we believe in better. Live from his own undisclosed location, repping his alma mater. Although he played for them much earlier than the Motion W appeared. It is former Packer, former Badger, and I believe at least for 1 year, maybe two, former Lion. It is our friend Gary Ellerson, our cousin sub of the day. Gary, good morning, buddy.
How you doing? We don't talk about those Lions days.
I know we don't, but it still counts.
You know what? I would tell you this. When I walked into the Lions facility and my first practice was the first time I ever saw a player sit on his helmet and smoke a cigarette during practice. I was like, what is this?
So was that Wayne Fonts? Wayne Fonts' era? Who was the coach then?
Daryl Rogers.
Oh, sure.
Wayne Fonts was the defensive coordinator, but he really was the head coach. Because Daryl Rogers went into a meeting, a press conference, and looked around at all the media people and go, what a guy got to do to get fired around here?
Wow.
Yeah.
He eventually accomplished that goal.
Oh, yeah. They paid him to go away.
It's quite an operation that you were playing for. All.
Right?
Although, Jeez. You know, the Packers had their struggles, too, during that era. We're thrilled to have you. I'm being told, because I took a couple days off for the holiday Easter weekend, that the next 2 days, you're here, but I'm not, and Tausch isn't. It's you and Jesse?
Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what I just came across my desk.
Where are you going?
I'm not going anywhere. It sounds like maybe I'll be joining the show. Just to help the cause
like.
Each day.
Yeah, that's what it sounds
numbers
like.
Are going to be in the tank. We're going to need you about 9:30 tomorrow, Jason.
I'll see what I can do.
Be that special guest.
I guest on my own show. I've always wanted to do that.
Oh, you've done it before.
I have. And I'm usually better in that role, frankly.
So, Jesus.
So, Gary, we appreciate that you have stepped into the breach. And I was hoping... Mm-hmm. To talk about a myriad of Packers-related topics, because there's some interesting stuff that I think you'll have great insight on, especially as a former running back. But I guess I wanted to start here, and when I look back on this offseason, you know, you have been very, very, very Which is it, bullish or bearish? What's the good one? You're feeling confident. What is that, Jesse? I always get this wrong. Tausch always corrects me.
Confident is bullish.
Bullish,
I believe,
right? Yes. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Because the Bears are bad, so bearish. What do you think?
There you go. Yeah. That's a good way to remember it. I appreciate that memory device that you just gave me. So you've been very bullish on the Packers, and I wanted to ask you if so far, because we haven't talked much. I think you filled in one other day in the offseason so far. What has transpired from January 21st, the day after the loss to the 49ers, to today, made you even more confident that this team is a Super Bowl contender, is legit, the quarterback is legit, they've added more pieces that they needed, the holes aren't... How have you viewed this kind of two-month span since the season ended?
Well, I can put it to you this way. I think they are a better football team today than when the season ended by the pieces that they've added. Now, I think they got to get more depth and really on the offensive line. You know, there's a couple of things that transpire. You know, David Bakhtiari is gone. Yash Nyman is gone. You lost John Runyon. So I think those three players, you now got to find depth behind those players. I think maybe you still could see that in free agency, or maybe you still can see that in the draft, but you've got to be able to protect your quarterback. And I know we talk a lot about Jordan Love, but I don't think a lot of people talk about Rasheed Walker that much. And really in the year that he had, I mean, I thought early on he struggled a little bit, but came in and played really, really well. And is that real? I don't know. So I think you've got to be able to maybe draft a tackle in the first round. Maybe there's a guard there somewhere that you need. So I still think when you look at the Packers right now, offensive line to me comes to mind where they have to shore up because they've lost a couple people that they need to replace.
Yeah, I said to Bulaga yesterday that I do not believe, I will be absolutely stunned if they come out of the first 2 days, which they have five picks. I know Tausch loves seven in the first 167. They've got five in the first 91. They got a first, 2 seconds, 2/3. I will be stunned if one of those five players, if they keep all five picks, is not an offensive lineman. And that's not me ripping Rasheed Walker. I think, considering where he came from, I thought he played quite well, and there is a chance he could be the guy as a seventh-round pick. But I don't. When I look at where they're at on the offensive line, that is a clear need, even though we know basically they're starting five right now.
Right. It is a huge need because what we talked about, the players that they lost and the depth that you need behind them. I would say I wouldn't be surprised out of those five picks, two of those are offensive linemen. Now, they're probably going to look a little bit more on the defensive side of football, but I still think with the addition of Xavier McKinney, that kind of solves that problem that they have in the secondary. Now, if you just go on the defensive side of football, is Isaiah McDuffie, is he the guy? Is he the starting the middle linebacker? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We saw when he filled in last year for Campbell, I thought he played really well. And he knows the system. He was with Halfley in Boston College. So there's some – they kind of know each other and what they like to do. But I still think that there may be a linebacker there drafted pretty high.
Yeah, they definitely need to add there, even though, obviously, if you're playing a 4-3, you'll have three linebackers on the field on early downs. But that guy's still only going to play like 25% of the snaps. That third linebacker is probably going to come off the field more often than not. I will also say this. You know, if we went through the offense. You talked about the offensive line. So we're talking about left to right, Walker, Jenkins, Myers, Ryan, and then Zach Tom. Right? And so I feel pretty good about that group. I really do. But, you know, if they drafted, let's say they go at 25 and there's a, you know, this is a really deep draft for offensive linemen. They're talking about eight guys going in the first round from the tackle guard spots. If there's a guy you really like at 25 and Rasheed Walker ends up as your new swing tackle backing up both sides, that's a really good problem to have. The dude started 15 games last year.
Right. You got the best of both worlds. And I think if you look at the Packers, they've always drafted linemen that can play multiple spots on the offensive line. So I think If anyone tells you they know who the Packers are going to draft, they're lying, because I've never been able to guess who they're drafting. But I would say this. I think that would be the best of both worlds. If you can bring in some competition for Walker, and still Walker may beat that guy out because he's understands the system. He's been there. He's had a full year on his belt at starting. So I still think that creates good competition on that offensive line, which I think they surely need. I think when you lose Runyon and now you're going to plug in Ryan, but you still have a guy in Sean Ryan who played a lot for you last year over. So, I mean, here's another guy that's had a lot of playing time for you as well.
And you've still got Royce Newman, who's always an option.
Yeah,
and his
still
moment.
Got Royce Newman in there. Yeah, you got to have him. Takes out the Don Mikowski, but that's fine.
He's got, it's a good look. So one guy, besides Don Mikowski, another one of your favorite people, is Josiah DeGuara.
Yeah, is he still on the team?
He's still available in free agency. No one has picked him up yet. I guess as the president of the Josiah DeGuara fan club, are you surprised by this lack of interest that there has been in him so far?
No, I'm not, but I think you'll see him back as a Green Bay Packer.
Just because you want him back, you've got pretty the ear confident. Of the GM, or how does
well,
that
I mean,
work?
No one can do what Josiah can do. I mean, he's can play like four or five positions for you. I mean, he can line up at tight end. I mean, he's your fullback. I mean, he's your motion guy. He's your H back. I mean, he can do it all. And you know, he teaches all the young guys. I mean, there's no one that can fill his position. Now you can get him at a bargain basement price, and you know the Packers love a good deal.
Yeah, they could, depending on how much of that $1.45 million they used on A.J. Dillon's contract, they could use some of that still on the fourth-year option
deal.
On him. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, real quick, were you surprised at the deal that A.J. Dillon got?
I was. I knew of its existence, but the Packers had never used it, and it is, you know, I've done some charity stuff with A.J. Dillon. I've mentioned before Paula coached his wife when she was a youngster at the gym in gymnastics. So I know people get irritated when I say this. I like him. I think he's a good dude. He's been great for
why
the community.
Why people get irritated?
Because I say that about Jordan Love a lot. And then there's guys that I don't like, and you know when I don't like them.
Oh, we know them. We know who they are.
It pains me to say goodbye to Devondre Campbell, and there's been a few over the years. But be that as it may, look, the deal is one that says basically we don't think you're very valuable, right? And that sucks. That is a crappy feeling to be given. But, you know, I'll give him this, because he could have easily started over somewhere else for slightly more money. You know, a little bit more than what he got, but probably not a ton more. But somewhere that would have felt like, hey, they really, really want me. Instead, he takes a bargain basement deal on a team that just paid a pretty good penny, at least in 2024 money, to Josh Jacobs, and tried to get Aaron Jones to take a pay cut down to below $4 million a year. And you know, he chose... You know, his family, his wife's family is from here. He loves it here. So he kind of swallowed his pride to make a lifestyle choice, even though the team didn't make him feel very valuable. And I'll say this, I respect that he was willing to do that, because I don't know how many people could.
And did it with a smile on his face. Hey,
yeah.
Didn't we just see him? Didn't we just see him on stage with Motley Crue here not too long ago?
I did. I believe he was. Is that the concert he was at?
Was that Motley Crue?
I don't. Sure. I have not been attending many concerts in the local area lately. But
you seem like a Motley Crue kind of guy.
Girls, girls, girls. Yes, that's the theme at my house, because I'm surrounded by them, with Paula and Maddie and Sid. Josh DiMaggio tells me it was a Zach Bryan show. So
yeah,
there you go.
Okay,
as much as, but you got a Motley Crue reference, which is even better than Zach Bryan, quite frankly. All right, I do want to get to something, speaking of running backs, that happened yesterday at the NFC coaches breakfast. And this I found very interesting. And I know there are some Packers fans, because they're already showing up in my Twitter feed, that think this is not a big deal. This is I'm making something out of nothing. But Matt LaFleur talking about how things shifted from Aaron Jones to Josh Jacobs had some very interesting things to say about how that occurred. So I want to get to that coming up next. We're going to have Tausch tell you about Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. But I got to be honest, Jesse, they were here at the house the other day, and I could easily take Tausch's place in the future now. Like, we sat down, we did the whole deal. I've had other window companies come in, and Pella blows their doors and windows off of them. Like, they are so much more impressive, and you feel so much more confidence than some of these fly-by-night window companies. You know you've got the best, and we're very excited about our process that we've got for our front window. Tausch is even more excited, and you can hear him talk about it as we lead into the commercial break with Gary Ellerson as our cousin sub of the day. It's Wildy and Tausch.
ESPN Wisconsin's Mark Tauscher here for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. If you've been waiting to replace broken windows or doors, or you just want to revitalize your home with a new look, now is the time to get it done. Because from now until March 31st, you can get 0% interest for up to 3 years at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. That's right. Pella now and pay later. 3 years later, in fact. Order by March 31st to get 0% interest for up to 3 years. Set your free consultation today at PellaWI.com. Certain restrictions do apply.
You're listening to Wildy and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN. Presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin and sponsored by American Family Insurance.
Is our cousin sub of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. Brant tweeted me to remind me, and believe me, I was such a Badger football nerd, at least in my high school and college years. Maybe not when I was four, you know, when Gary was running the football for the Badgers. Okay, maybe not that young. But the only way you could watch the Badgers on TV was WHA in Madison, the PBS affiliate, would run the game tape delayed. And was I a big enough nerd that my freshman year at the University of Wisconsin in 1990, instead of going out with my buddies in Bradley Hall and carousing the streets, although I didn't have a fake ID, so it wasn't like I was going to bars and I didn't like parties. Was I a big enough nerd to sit in my dorm room and rewatch the Badger game that I had attended earlier? A 1-10 Badgers team coached by first-year head coach Barry Alvarez in 1990? Yes, I was.
That was bad. That was bad football.
Not only was it bad, I spent that year in the student section and vowed never to do it again because I had been waiting basically my whole life to be a Badger. Right, I literally was 4 years old when I got my first, I have it here somewhere, my stuffed Bucky Badger. And I always wanted to go to Wisconsin. I was so excited when I got in and I went to the first football game. And then it's profane chants in the student section. It's the rowing where somebody, some stranger's grabbing you in the back and the shoulders. And then that was the era where they were throwing cups at each other. In the student section, I'm like, I don't care that they're terrible. I've been waiting for this my whole life, and I can't watch the game. So after that, I became a reporter, and I went up to the press box and never had to deal with it again. But, yes, I used to watch the games on PBS, and you and Al Toon and the crew, quite a crew back in the day.
Randy Wright. Can't forget about Randy Wright.
No, you can't. And you were Packers teammates too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And Kenny Stills. I tell you this, my signing bonus with the Packers, first thing I did, I bought season tickets, Badger season tickets, was my first money I spent out of my check. Four. Kenny Stills and I went in together and bought four seats in Section D, row 11. Right on the corner, the first four seats.
I appreciate your support of our alma mater, but I have to ask, given what you guys accomplished at Wisconsin, they couldn't just comp you tickets every week that you wanted to go? NFL players that you were?
Yeah, but they could be anywhere. I wanted my seats. in my spot. So I've had those seats since, what, 1984.
Wait, you still have them?
I still have them. 1984.
Wow!
Yep.
Instead of going up to a suite or something else because you're a big deal around campus, you're still in the same seats that you bought as a rookie for the Packers.
Yes. I sit on the 45-yard line right there, behind the bench.
In 1984. Hey, so do the people? 1984. So do the people around you?
I should get an award for that.
You should, or at least, or maybe they're just going to come ask you for some contributions to the NIL collective.
That's what they do. Yeah.
Do all the same people have the seats around you? Like, do they all know? Hey, we're sitting with Badgers royalty. We're sitting with Gary Ellerson and Kenny Stills, or no?
Yeah. So the people in front of me have had those seats as long as I have had them. And the people behind me have had the seats as long as I have had them. Now, we've seen some changes over the years, but for the most part, there's about a group of four or five people have had them since 1984.
Wow. That's a great story. It's amazing what you stumble into.
Right. And over the years, I have brought back, you know, guys like Mark Lee, Lynn Dickey. They've all sat in those seats at one point in time or another where we would have a Badger game on a Saturday and a Packer game on a Sunday, and we'd go to the Badger game Saturday and come back and do the Packer game on Sunday. Walter Stanley, all those guys.
Philip Epps, Ed West, have they made the cut?
Ezra Johnson.
Was he eating a hot dog?
Of course he's eating a hot dog.
So for those of you that are too young to get that reference, let me explain it. We'll get to Matt LaFleur in a minute. So Ezra Johnson is famous for I don't remember the year, but during a preseason game, he was out of the game already, in fairness to Ezra. But he was eating a hot dog on the sideline. And so that's why I asked if he's eating a hot dog while he's sitting with you at the Badger game.
It's a big joke when we go back for reunion, and everybody talks about that. And so Bart Starr asked him, Ezra, why are you eating a hot dog on the sideline? You know what Ezra Johnson's answer was?
No.
Because I was hungry.
Seems like a logical answer.
Makes sense to me.
There are some characters from your era. We should have... For the times because that you I fill in as our cousin sub of the day, we should have like story time with Gary. Because some that would have to be like digital only, I would assume. But there are some characters back then that you could tell stories about. All right. So I do want to get to this LaFleur thing. Since you brought this up, I want to ask quickly because you are, and when we were doing the pregame show during the 2022 season, you know, you would have a different alumni come and spend some time with you and me and Greg Matzik, and you're pretty active in that realm. You were at the Super Bowl with some of your former teammates and some other former Packers too. There's two pieces to this question. One, is that something that is important because as time goes by and you're out of the game for a long time, like all players talk about how hard it is. They don't miss necessarily game days as much as they miss the time in the locker room with their teammates. And then the other fact of it is, and I think of this when I think of Makowski, you know, do you have hope as a former player? And do you guys talk about this when you're together? That maybe the next collective bargaining agreement, since it didn't happen for this one, they do a better job at looking out for the guys who came before them, because you guys, I keep hoping for them to do a better job on the healthcare front for former players, and I'm always let down by that.
Yeah, they need to do a better job in that. But I will say this. I think the Packers, they probably do a better job more than any other NFL team out there that still relates to older players, still have them come back, still do certain functions for them, and have them come back and participate. You're right. I think the hardest thing for guys when they leave and go away is that they miss the locker room. I don't even know if they miss playing, but they miss the guys in the locker room that goes through the same thing. And if you were so to happen to have a wife that you had while you're playing. Those wives also a very important part of the camaraderie of people that they met and that they hung out with, and really that they grew up with. And not a lot of people can relate to that. So then you fast forward to the NFL Players Association. They also do a great job of bringing all players back to certain events. Now, if you look at the healthcare situation, yeah, that could be a lot better than what it is for a lot of former players. There's a lot of money that they're making. We're seeing right now they're going to play on Christmas, and the NBA doesn't stand a chance. NBA doesn't stand a chance. I mean, they're just blowing the doors off the NBA right now. So we are making a lot of money. I just don't think they're sharing the wealth as well as they could. But I will say this, the Packers, Kathy Dvorak, Nathaniel, those guys up there, I think they've done a great job of keeping guys that want to be around, that want to come and hang out. Mm-hmm. They do a great job of bringing everybody back. Now, I think we have two NFL, we have two Packers suites right now. We're all former players. You can go, you can get two tickets, sit in the suite, hang out with your fellow teammates, bring your daughter, bring your wife, bring your kids. And I think they do a great job of that.
And someday they'll invite Aaron Jones to join you in that suite after he's done playing for the Vikings or whoever right. else he ends up right. playing with in future years. And for Matt LaFleur, the way that played out came as a bit of a surprise. He talked about that yesterday at the NFL meetings. We'll talk about that coming up next. You can take it to the bank. We won't play take it to the bank today, but you can take it to the bank that he would have liked to have had Aaron Jones still on his football team. I feel fairly confident in that, and that's not a slight on Josh Jacobs. We'll talk about that coming up. Speaking of banks, Associated Bank, it is the official bank of the Packers, and yes, I even snuck them in to my lead in yesterday's Wisconsin State Journal story about Jordan Love, because that's the place to be if you're a Packers fan. Not only do they have Packers checking, where you can get the Packers debit MasterCard, and Packers checking has the 10% off discount at the Packers Pro Shop in-store and online, but you also get the best customer service in the industry. So go to AssociatedBank.com/Packers to find out more. More with Gary Ellerson, our cousin sub of the day. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN, sponsored by American Family Insurance. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home...
Speaking of distinguished alumni of the Packers and outstanding cousin subs of the day, cousin subs we believe in better, you heard him yesterday as our cousin sub. Today, he's got something going on. I don't know what it is exactly, but I know he's on the tailgate tour. We'll have to ask him what he's up to today. He is I'm going to say it, even though Tausch might hear it in the podcast. He's our favorite right tackle. Not even Zach Tom can compete with that. It is Brian Bulaga. I'm Wilde and Tausch. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Morning. How are you guys doing?
I'm going to pay a price for that, I'm sure, when the big fella gets back. Hey, what do you got going on today? Because you were nice enough to fill in yesterday. You're nice enough to join us today for a little while. But you're getting ready for the tailgate tour, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I got some media obligations, some phone calls, some things I got to do promoting that and some of the nonprofits that we're going to be visiting and trying to help fundraise for when we're on the road. So I got a couple of those today. I got some stuff out at the property I got to take care of. So Abby and I are going to go out there and do a couple things. I got a couple things going on today. A couple things going on.
Well, we appreciate you carving out some time for us. So I wanted to, I knew you were going to join us. So I wanted to bounce this off of both of you guys, because I know that I'm going to be accused of having some bias on it. So yesterday, Matt LaFleur is talking at the NFL coaches breakfast, at the NFC coaches breakfast, and over comes Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. And he asks, I think, what was intended to be an innocuous question, which was, about the process of signing Josh Jacobs. And Matt LaFleur's reply was, "That's a great question. It kind of caught me off guard, to be honest with you." So Rap Sheet, as he's known on Twitter, follows up, and Matt says, "There were some other things in play. Obviously, with Aaron Jones, I didn't quite know how everything was going to go, and it just happened really fast on that Monday. They came down," I think he means Russ Ball and Goody, "and when they were allowed to start talking to those guys, it happened really fast. So I don't know the details of that. I'm not involved in those types of conversations. But yeah, we were super excited to get Josh Jacobs." Brian, I'll start with you. How do you interpret that?
It sounds about right, because I interpret it through my own experience. Obviously, when I left in, you know, back in 2020, and I got my agent called and said that Russ Ball called my agent, said they were sending Ricky Wagner. Shortly after that, I got a call from Matt LaFleur saying he didn't no one really communicated that to him as well. So it doesn't sound completely shocking to me that that's kind of the way it went down. And if we all remember the way this thing, when they restructured the coaching triangle with Russ Ball and the GM and the head coach, you know, they had that little pyramid looking thing or triangle looking thing and how they all communicate with each other. The coach is probably going to be the last one to hear about that based on the GM communicating with Mark Murphy about what they want to do, and then they're going to go do it, and then they're going to tell Coach LaFleur at the end. And obviously the need, we all know the need was for a running back, right? Matt LaFleur, I would imagine, really loves Aaron Jones, likes Aaron Jones, knows what Aaron Jones brings to the team. And the front office saw something a little bit different that they might have, you know, thought was a better opportunity, and they jumped on the opportunity and then let Matt know at the end. And that's kind of what it sounds like, you know, was the communication pattern there. So I'm not shocked, because I can relate to that kind of very similarly when I went through my deal. So it just sounds like that's the way the structure set up. And, you know, yeah.
So
that's how I look at it.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So, Gary, because you played in an era when there was some dysfunction in the front office, obviously, as well, right? And I'm going to get grief from some of our fans, and that's fine. I do believe that this structure is flawed. I will be the first to admit that they won a Super Bowl with Ron Wolf as the GM and Mike Holmgren as the head coach, and there was a clear hierarchy. But those two, even though they definitely disagreed at times, worked well together within that structure. They won a Super Bowl with Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy, even though they disagreed at times, even though Mike didn't like the fact that he had to be the spokesman for the organization way too often, that worked as well. And then they decided to put the coach and the GM on the same line. And frankly, it feels to me, and I have people in the building who have told me this, that Matt LaFleur does not have the voice that maybe you would think if they're supposedly on the same line of the flow chart organizationally. My question for you, Gary, because I think it is a problem, but I don't want to be biased, is this, like, if the whole idea of the structure being so there would be fewer silos was why they changed the structure, according to Mark Murphy, when the coach isn't being apprised of a major shift in a major position in his offense, is that not at least a little bit problematic, or am I being dramatic?
Well, if they go win a Super Bowl this year, I don't think it's going to matter, right?
Right. I mean, sure.
I mean, over the last 20 years, they're the most successful organization in the NFL the way they've done it. And you and I have talked about this all the time. And I kind of tease you a little bit about the structure, mm-hmm. and I know you're unhappy about it, but it works. I mean, if you look at the results, it works. Players don't like it, I'm sure, because they're not in on it. I mean, I think, isn't this one of the things that Rodgers was all upset about 4 years ago when he just went scorched earth on everybody and told, you know, he was standing up for the Charles Woodsons and the Cullen Jinxes of the world. People mm-hmm. that never knew they were going to come back, never got a phone call. Now we're hearing Bulaga saying the same thing. Josh Sitton, I think, was may be a part of all that situation mm-hmm. where they went down doing, I think Badgers were playing LSU at Lambeau Field, and that happened during that game. So it was nuts. Say this to say that. I don't know how they do it. To me, I think Matt LaFleur should be a part of it. So it just feels like Matt LaFleur. And Matt LaFleur goes, well, I guess I got to go coach him up.
Right?
Literally. That's what it is.
I got to go coach him up. I think it's wrong. I really do. I think the head coach should be privy to the guys that they're are bringing in. He should at least know or even ask, does this guy work? Or he may not have a say, but I think he should know who's coming in the door. When they get wasn't there 1 year when they brought in a quarterback and Mike McCarthy was up at the podium? Someone asked him about a quarterback that Mike McCarthy didn't even know that was coming in. And he goes, well, I guess that's news to me. And so to me, I think it makes the organization look bad. But it works. We're winning. I'm on both sides here, but it's not a good look.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? Like, and the whole thing that Aaron kind of was going on about, I remember back when he did it, because I remember watching the press conference in the locker room in L.A. when he kind of went on his little tangent about it. And, you know, I understood where he was coming from and veteran guys that have given X amount to the organization, just a simple phone call. I get all that. And, like, you know, cool. It would have been nice if Goody would have called me. I mean, that is what it is. And, I mean, listen, I've talked to Brian a bunch since then, and you know, and there's no hard feelings between me and Goody at all. Like I actually enjoy talking to him. I think he's a great guy. I think I look at it from the perspective of when Matt did call me, and he was like, he goes, "What, you know, was there something we could have done?" And I just was like, "Matt, there was never even offer on the table. So there's nothing that you guys could have done because there wasn't a negotiation." And I think that's the thing that we're all kind of agreeing on here, is that the head coach should maybe be looped in on a couple of these things as major transactions get made. Now, obviously, no one's going to argue with the player that they got, right? Like, I don't think anyone's going to sit here and say they're not excited about the player. That's not the issue. I think just the issue is, you know, when you bring in, you know, this offense at the heart of it, and Matt LaFleur's offense is a run first offense. That is what it is at the heart of it. And when you bring in, or not even bring in, when you let go of an Aaron Jones and bring in someone without communicating that to the head coach, it does make you kind of look at it and go, you know, what is being told? Like, what is the line of communication between the head coach and the GM and the owner? And we know the structure, but could that be cleaned up? I mean, I think we all look at that and agree that that should be cleaned up. Gary, as you said, they win and it works, and we all understand that, and that's great. But I just look at it because obviously I know Matt personally, and then when he gets asked a question like that and that's the answer he gives, it kind of makes you go, oof, man, like that's you know, it just doesn't sound right. You know what I mean? Because I can assure you, if you walk over to the AFC breakfast, Andy Reid knows absolutely everything that is going on with players in, players out. I can assure you, even now, where I came from in L.A., Harbaugh knows every player in and out. There's no line of communication that's not being given to the head coach. So that's the only thing I look at it as. And you know, we understand Green Bay, they do things different than other teams just because they don't have an owner and this and that. But if it's me, I'm looking to try to loop in the head coach as much as possible about major decisions being made. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and look, in fairness, there are some advantages too, right? Because let's say a guy's going through a contract dispute. The coach is able to say, hey, I'm on your side, man, right? Like, he's got that's a player that's important to his locker room, whatever. That gives him some plausible deniability, right? So that's not a bad thing. But when he publicly admits, and I'm not getting after LaFleur here for saying this, I want the truth, and this is what the truth is. It's not a good look, as Gary said. Now, I would also add this, and Brian, you made a good point about you and Goody's relationship. And I had a couple of people coming at me yesterday on social media. I hate this organization. I hate the general manager. Goody and I have a really good working relationship. I like Goody the guy. At times, I do criticize him. And you can probably say that I play the greatest hits of my issues with him on a regular basis. The Devontae Adams trade, the way they treated Jordy, the way they treat players on their way out the door. This is another one that adds on. But I would argue to those that think I'm too critical of him or that I hate him, which is just fundamentally not true. Like, we send Christmas cards to each other, for crying out loud. Like, I don't hate Brian Gutekunst. What I do think is it's my job to, if I think he did something that I don't agree with and I think is a bad look, it's for me to say that it's not a good look. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say in some of these instances, including the Aaron Jones departure and the way the head coach was not aware of this. But I don't hate Brian Gutekunst. And by the way, if these are the only greatest hits that I play to criticize him, that's a pretty good sign that he hasn't done that much that deserves criticism, because if I was covering another team with a really crappy GM, we'd be spending every show talking about what an idiot move this was, and that was, and that was. And that's not the case. He is a very good GM. I don't think he's great with people, especially with people in the building. And I think there are people in the building that would back me up on that. And it wasn't just Aaron Rodgers. And we all have things we can improve on. And I hope that maybe he's improved in that department from the days that, you know, you found out they were signing Ricky Wagner and that was it for you as a Green Bay Packer. Doesn't mean you hold a grudge against them, but there's ways to do it. That's all.
But if you go back, though, but Ted Thompson, was he a great people person? I don't think he was. I mean, these guys are from the same people. I mean, maybe he learned that from them. Just to go back even further, though, but the doom of Mike Sherman was the GM head coach, where then I think some of the relationships that he had with players soured.
No doubt.
And then that's when the Packers decide to go back and change that again, because Mike Sherman couldn't do both. And so now we are where we are again, and now we're still having a situation with your head coach not being privy to the guys that you brought in. I just think that I'm with Brian. They do need to clean that up a little bit. But we've seen in Packer history that how bad Forrest Gregg, Tom Brotts, I mean, you can go on and on and on, how bad the situation was at certain times in Packer history.
Yeah, and in fairness, I hold people to very difficult standards. The team president I hold to Bob Harlan's standard, and the general manager, no matter who it is, I hold to the Ron Wolf standard. Who, look, Ron Wolf could be a cantankerous fella, but he was a straight shooter with his players. And there was no player ever left without a meeting with him first. And that is something that probably needs to be improved upon. I would also add this. With Ted, early in his tenure, he was a little more like Ron in terms of dealing with players. I think you're right. I think as time went on, and maybe his health factored into this, he was not as communicative with players. There were other issues that I know Brian's never going to get into on the radio about some of the things that were handled inside the building back then. So I get it. But that doesn't mean that now the next guy can't just be like Ted. Like, he needs to be better at that. I think that's a valid criticism. Again, I don't think I criticize him much. Brian, before we let you get ready for all of your tailgate tour plans, we had the news of the kickoff changes come into play yesterday while you were on the show. I'm going to ask Gary, because I'm guessing the kickoff was a very different experience for him back when he was a player in his era. I am curious, though, we didn't get to talk a lot about Keyshawn Nixon. And given how much you watch tape, not just to the offensive line, it sounds to me, forget the kickoff aspect of him, Matt LaFleur and Goody both talked about how much Halfley really likes Keyshawn Nixon and what he can do in his defense. Did you see that in Joe Barry's defense? And are you intrigued at how excited they are to have Keyshawn Nixon back as a defensive player? Because you and I didn't get to that yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the new structure of what Joe, you know, what Halfley's bringing in compared to what Joe Barry did. I mean, we're talking night and day differences of the structure of this defense and what's being asked of DBs. And I thought last year Nixon on defense, and this is not a knock on him. I think it's kind of just the way the defense was. There were guys out there in the secondary that at times didn't seem like they knew what their responsibility was. And they were very – and that was very clear in the Giants game when they said communication wasn't getting – you know, sent across the field on what coverages they're supposed to be running and things of that nature. When it's a 2-minute drill and you don't know what coverage you're supposed to be in, that's a problem, right? So
yes.
I feel like with this structured defense, yes, he wants to be aggressive with his corners and with his nickel guys and the safeties, which I think is really good for a guy like Nixon, because I think he's an aggressive guy by nature. He is a full-time special teams guy, and those guys that return kicks and cover kicks and do things like that are aggressive by nature. That's what they're kind of cut to do. So I think he will be a good fit. How they deploy him, whether it's in the slot, whether he moves, depending on what they do in the draft, if he's a guy that they like to move in and out of the safety position. I don't think he's a corner at heart. I don't think that's his best role, because the way this defense is going to be played, like I've told you before, Jason, I like all these guys come from that cover three mindset of Pete Carroll and that Seahawks defense. The corners are butts to the sideline, eyes on the quarterback, backpedaling and jump routes. And then they show man, drop into cover three, and they're aggressive. I'm not sure that's Nixon's thing out at corner, but at the slot position, I can certainly see him fitting in nicely there. But again, it's hard to like put all my eggs in that basket when we didn't really just see it on tape last year. There's just not much evidence of that. So clearly there's something that they see that they really like or Halfley really likes. But I think this will all be dependent on where they deploy him based on what they do in the draft, right? Like if we talked about Cooper DeJean or any safeties that are coming out, like if you draft a DeJean, you're probably going to play him at safety, and then you're checking that box for Nixon to be in the slot, which is, I think, a really good position for him. He could be aggressive, get his hands on guys, disrupt route timing and things like that. So there's a role for him, but just based on what they do in the draft and what guys they bring in to fill in that secondary where he's gonna slot in.
Brian's right. I think – when you watch the Packers secondary last year, and it, for those people that can see me, it was always the shrug emoji.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when this is why I need to watch the video.
Every game, shrug emoji. So when you got the shrug emoji going, you've got a problem. It seems like for the last 10 years, the Packers secondary, all of it get the shrug emoji. So communication is the key back there. Hopefully Xavier McKinney, hopefully they bring him in. He can clear up some of that stuff, and all these guys can be on the same page.
Brian, we'll let you get ready for the bus tour. I think we have a special surprise for when that departs in a couple of weeks.
Quick question to Brian.
Sure.
Who's all on the bus tour, Brian? Who's there?
So it'll be myself, Kenny Clark, Elton Jenkins, Alex Green, remember running back when I was there early on, and then Mike Daniels, who is always a great personality to have on a bus for five straight days. So, it's always good to be on a bus with Mike Daniels for 5 days. So, yeah, that's what we got going on.
Good luck to you, sir. There's some intensity there. He was on with us a couple weeks ago. He is a joy. That, all kidding aside, he's a fun guy, and we appreciate you. We will see you next week. Maybe Tausch will be back to talk with you, and I'll talk to you at some point on the Homer Hour as well. Thanks, Brian.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is our friend Brian Bulaga as he gets ready. I think the tailgate tour leaves on like April 9th or 10th-ish, but it is coming through Sun Prairie, and I think we're going to be there as well. All right, more with Gary Ellerson as our cousin sub of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. Stick around. It's Wildy and Tausch.
You're listening to Wildy and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN. Missed any of the show? Find us on Wisconsin On Demand wherever you get your podcasts. It's free, it's everywhere, and it's for you.
Bullock. Always great to catch up with him. He's doing double duty this week, filling in for Tausch as a cousin sub yesterday and then joining us today. All right, Gary, real quick before we get to the 10 o'clock hour, we had a little fun at Mike Daniels' expense, the idea of being on a bus for 5 days with him. Your teammate, I'm going to put you on the spot, your teammates from your time that you would not, or maybe you would really, like to be on a bus for 5 days with.
One teammate?
You can pick as many as you want. It's your bus.
It's my bus. Well, you've got to have Lynn Dickey on the bus.
I love him. He's great.
He's got to be there. And then you got to have James Lofton on the bus. You just got to have him. And you got to have Ron Hallstrom on the bus.
Really? Another old 65?
You got to have Ron Hallstrom on the bus. And then you got to have Greg Cook and Ron Hallstrom kind of go together.
Oh, boy, that's trouble.
Is that trouble? And then for myself, you have to have the calming influence of all of that along with James Lofton. You got to have Gary Ellis on the bus.
Is he the calming influence?
Yes. Yes, because he kind of brings everybody together. James is kind of a smart guy. And then you got to have Paul Kaufman and Lynn Dickey because they kind of pair off on each other. So you got to pair guys up to to calm one guy down and then to make sure, but still enough guys to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't be on the bus with me because no one could control him would be Charles Martin.
R.I.P. Right? He's no longer with us?
Yes. He's no longer with us. Could not have him on the bus.
Could we have him on the bus?
Charles Martin story? You ready for his Charles Martin story?
I love Charles Martin stories. Yeah, we've got time.
So we're at a local watering hole in Green Bay. And so we go to the same place all the time. I mean, Green Bay was small back then, and, you know. And so everybody knows all the Packer players. I don't think Packer players hang out as much as they used to in Green Bay.
Probably fair.
I don't think these guys see them. Right. So we go to this local watering hole, and everybody knows we're there. And Charles Martin liked to line up all his beers, all the empties, bottles. And he would line them up on the bar. And so there could be about, I don't know, 25 to 30 empty bottles on the bar, all lined up. He liked to look at them, blah, 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 blah. And the bartender, we always have the same bartender all the time. Well, this particular night, there was a different bartender. So Charles gets up to go to the bathroom, fine, comes back. The bartender, as well as he should, clean out all the bottles, gone. Charles proceeded to go across the bar to grab the bartender and strangle him.
Oh, no.
And then we all had to grab Charles. And Charles is screaming, he threw away my bottles. He threw away my bottles. And we were saying, Charles, it's his first. He doesn't know the Charles Martin rule. He's just some kid from Green Bay Southwest trying to earn a little money. Relax. So we had to get Charles out of the bar. Next thing we know, here comes the cops. We're going one way, and the cops are going the other way. We get Charles out of the bar. Rest is history.
Why am I not surprised, though, that Charles Martin, who, of course, is well-known for his body slam of Jim McMahon, would have maybe overreacted to his bottles being taken away from him. Those are the kind of stories we get when we've got Gary. Gary Ellerson is our cousin sub of the day. We'll kick off the 10 o'clock hour in 2 minutes. So stick around. It's Wildy and Tausch.